It really is bad. Like, the first time I used it, I pulled up and I caught my reflection in the mirror, and it looked like when your eyes are cried out after you've just been puking for a night.
Welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Pablo Torre. That's Mike Golic Jr. That's Dominique Foxworth. Find out what we're talking about.
Don't, actually. You don't want to know.
Have the Jazz finally won you over?
I don't know if there's a team that has ever existed that has had to work harder to earn my love. Because keep in mind, they have a Filipino guy on their team who won the Sixth Man of the Year, Jordan Clarkson. I'm still like, is this team really the best team in the NBA? Are they really deserving of this one seed? I mean, what they are doing against the Clippers now, up 2-0, a performance last night that really, I think, destabilized the entire confidence and future of the Clippers organization. Because if you cannot guard Donovan Mitchell, when you have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, when you are winning the basic math of superstardom, you have the superstars. They're missing Mike Conley, and they're relying on a guy who's younger than 25 to carry them in this way, averaging 41 a night against your team that's supposed to be a contender. Yes, the Utah Jazz have earned my respect, my adoration. I feel stupid, honestly, waiting this long to say to the team that has the best record in the entire NBA, turns out you guys are really good.
Yeah, it is amazing how much the logos mess us up on the obvious. Like, these are all 1 and 2 seeds. It's something about, I don't know if Utah and Denver are technically in the Southwest like Phoenix, but that sort of like area of teams, we have a really hard time getting over and trying to actually buy into. But I sat there last night, because I'm on the East Coast watching these games. I want to go to bed, and I'm like, damn, I can't go to bed because I genuinely want to stay up and watch this exciting brand of Utah Jazz basketball. And it wasn't a joke. And most of that is Donovan Mitchell and what he brings to this team, because you've got a modern basketball team that is spacing, that is very dependable, reliable three-point shooters. But none of the rest of it exists without Donovan Mitchell being able to do the things that he has done in this game. He's almost built like a running back. He's solid and able to maneuver in tight spaces on the interior. It's just become an all-around entertaining product from the Utah Jazz in a way that I was not ready to say out loud until right now.
If anyone ever tells you again, like they've told you in the past, that market size doesn't matter, tell them to shut up. Or that the draft status doesn't matter, tell them to shut up. Because if you can imagine, if Donovan Mitchell was a first overall pick in New York or in one of these in LA or one of these major markets, we'd be talking about him and treating him much differently. Like, his game has developed to a point where Shaq kind of criticized him. You remember that awkward moment after the game where Shaq kind of told him, like, you're not the one? Like, that would have been unspeakable had he done this in another situation. But we expect so little from guys who are drafted late, and we pay so little attention to these teams in these areas that we don't really care about, that we've got to the point where he's the best player on the floor in a playoff game with the guy who we thought was the best player in the NBA last year. And we're just getting around to be like, oh yeah, that's weird. And then on top of it, defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert seems to have gotten better at defense. The nerd reason why I would roll out and say Utah's not going to make it. The truth is, I didn't watch them enough to be able to tell you whether they were good or not. But I'd say, you know, the problem is they're gonna play Rudy Gobert off the floor because he can't play on the perimeter. And
that's
then they
take.
Lose their best defensive guy. And I'd say that I'd feel smart. But then I watch these games. He won game one because of his perimeter defense. Like, he is a guy that you cannot screen off the floor. You can't draw away from the basket and punish that team in the way that they have in the past. So, yes, they've earned my respect, but I'm still not picking them to win the finals.
Can we just talk about how hilarious it is, though, to watch Steve Ballmer contemplate how it is that he could be so rich and so helpless at the same time? Like, watching him love basketball so authentically and then clearly thinking, like, how much more money do I need to spend? What else do I need to... Kawhi Leonard could leave this offseason. Like, he went all in on this whole entire premise. And now Donovan Mitchell, who Dominique pointed out something very important, I think. Donovan Mitchell was taken 13th. You know who was taken 12th in that same draft? Luke Kennard. You know who has been murdered by Donovan Mitchell in this series every time? Luke Kennard, who is absolutely that guy to Donovan Mitchell, even if I totally forgot that that guy was even a lottery pick.
Do you think the Bucks are actually back in this series against the Nets?
So you guys ever play Mario Kart where someone hits you with a red shell right before the finish line and you win the race, but you're also like spinning backwards and about to die at the same time? That's what watching the Brooklyn Nets lose to the Milwaukee Bucks last night felt like. Because Mike Budenholzer looked lost. If there's any team that is built in the image of their coach, it is that guy, that coach who looks like he is throwing out the garbage at 3 a.m. because he forgot to do it and knows he's going to get yelled at by his wife. So, in the middle of all of this, was Giannis Antetokounmpo, the defending two-time MVP, that guy. And he did this at the free throw line.
And he should take your advice. You know why? Because I've done my research. And you're one of the top 10, 13
he was teams where he otherwise a productive player last night. But
was he?
The aesthetics.
He shot a lot of threes that hit a lot of nothing.
Call him a compiler, Dominique. Do it.
He shot so many threes, and there was 10 seconds going by again because he doesn't yet know how to shoot free throws without being penalized for not having shot the free throw yet. So I don't feel good about somebody who said Bucks in seven, but I'm curious what you guys saw.
Yeah, I'm depressed by watching that Giannis clip. And you're right about Budenholzer. He's going to be looking for another job real soon. But I really do want to focus on Giannis. The free throw thing is outlandish because I'm fine with you taking 12, 13 seconds to shoot a free throw. If you hit them, like, why take that long? Why go through that process? Because clearly that process don't work. You need to catch and shoot. Like you are getting a corner three from the referee. Like that's what we should do. He should now try to set the record for the quickest free throw because taking all that time seemed to not work necessarily.
Can have the ref be like, yo, ref, could you just throw it to me real quick as if you're passing it to me so I can just get it in one motion?
I mean, I wouldn't imagine. I guess I would say that couldn't get any worse, but we saw him trying to shoot threes and continuing to shoot those threes and only hitting one. And they are tantamount to a turnover, it feels like. You might as well throw it out of bounds or get a steal or something. Actually, out of bounds, at least you get a chance to set up your defense and you don't get caught in transition. So the way that he is playing right now is unfortunate. And I think that's why Mike Budenholzer will be looking for a job very soon, because Giannis is not without skills. He's not without talent. He's a two-time MVP. Seeing that they can't find a way to use him properly suggests to me that there's a problem with their game plan, not a problem with Giannis, because Giannis hasn't changed. His skill set is his skill set. It's a very good skill set, and it's being misused because I see him so often with the ball at the top of the key looking down at everybody like you're Kevin Durant. That ain't you, son. I'm sorry. You're not that guy.
Wait, Mike, my favorite part of when Giannis gets the ball at the top of the key is when he does the thing like you have a race car that you like a Micro Machines thing where you have to like rev it back to go forward. Like he does that. He backs up to go forward.
Why did he put him in that situation and then his defender is 10 feet off? Like, stop doing that to him. It's embarrassing and it's unfair.
I was going to say it's embarrassing because on the other end, I had to watch him get blocked by Blake Griffin, like 2021 Blake Griffin at the rim, not the high flyer from before. So we have reduced Giannis to the Bryson DeChambeau of free throw shooting. And now we've got a team, because we always say this, the Bucks, I don't feel much better about in this series, to go back to the original question, because we always say, like, the cliche going into this time of year is, every team will take on the personality of its superstar player. The problem is the Bucks won that game taking on the personality of PJ Tucker collectively last night. Like, look at PJ Tucker out here throwing hands with Kevin Durant. This is the entire game in a nutshell.
Two Texas alums just exchanging.
Where's the security guard coming from?
That guy.
Why did he just come in and escalate this?
So apparently, our producers have informed us that is Kevin Durant's personal bodyguard. And I can't tell if that guy was hired specifically to do that or if that guy has been told very specifically not to do that.
Up next on HQ.
Does he think we're stupid or is he stupid? Like, I feel like though, when someone tries to hit me with such a blatant deception? That's the question that always pops in my mind.
Do you believe everything is all good with Russ and the Seahawks now?
You may recall how Russell Wilson said something interesting for the first time in his, well, it wasn't actually himself. It was his representative saying he did want to contemplate a life without the Seahawks. But here he is to tell us that actually you got that all wrong.
Well, I think, first of all, you know, obviously I love Seattle. I love playing here. You know, I've had a great career here so far. I've always wanted to play here for my whole career. Obviously, I think there were some, you know, unfortunate frustrations after the season. Obviously, you want to win it all and do it all and do everything you can, you know. And I think everybody on our team does. We all want to win it. And, you know, I think unfortunately it got a little, you know, a little bit blown out of proportion a little bit. But I think that the reality was there are a lot of people, there was a whole thing saying that I requested a trade. And that's just not true. You know, I didn't request a trade, you know. So I think everything kind of started from there. And then obviously tons of teams were calling. And I think that the reality was, is that I didn't really want to go anywhere else. I wanted to play in Seattle, but if I had to go somewhere, these are the teams I would go to.
If there was ever a need for a friend to lie on your behalf, we would all be so lucky if it was Russell Wilson, because never has a person had fewer sleeves and sounded more politically savvy than Russell Wilson in that mini press conference that he had. And I imagine that he still feels resentful for all the reasons he did before. I don't know what's really changed other than the fact that he has to play on the Seahawks now, but that smile, that twinkle in his eye, that was A-plus political operative.
Yeah, Russell Wilson is an example of what happens when you try and be too happy all the time. Like, no one is that happy all the time, but the entire Seahawks culture is built around positive vibes and going in the same direction with each other. Russell Wilson has been living his Seahawks tenure like that smiling mask with the guy crying behind it, the meme that we all see on Twitter. And this offseason was what happens when you finally get tired and lift off the mask. Because you heard in that press conference, all he said was, yeah, everything that happened this offseason was exactly as it was reported. We weren't actively shopping me, but once we heard, all right, maybe this isn't a guarantee, these are the places I would like to go play in all this. I have a feeling that Russ realized that $41 million or $40 million dead cap hit was going to be an impediment, anything he wanted done, getting done. So he sat down with John and Pete and had some conversations so they can go about this amicably. But I think most of us looked at this and said, next year's really going to be where the rubber meets the road on this. Can they do enough in the meantime to pacify during this next season? Or are we going to be right back here? Because I agree with you, Pablo. I don't think most of those feelings of resentment go away unless you see changes in the way he's protected and the way the offense is allowed to run.
Does he think we're stupid, or is he stupid? Like, I feel like though that when someone tries to hit me with such a blatant deception, that's the question that always pops in my mind. Like, either this person is not smart enough to realize, excuse me, that this lie is not going to work, or this person believes that I'm not smart enough to understand that this is obviously not true. Russell did something that I think is kind of impressive, is that with his words, he kind of walked us through exactly what happened. But with his tone, he suggested that there was nothing going on the whole time. It's such a weird magic trick that he tried to pull off. And I guess he's probably pulling it off successfully because he's probably done it his whole life. He's certainly done it his entire playing career, where he always says the right thing and does the right thing. And we all believe it. We all accept it. I don't know if we ever believe that it's genuine, but we all accept it. At this point, we saw something genuine happen, and now he's trying to flirt with us into believing that it wasn't a real thing. Like, come on, Russ. You won out of town. You still won out of town, but now you know that you can't go anywhere now, so you're going to be quiet. Guarantee you, if they don't win the Super Bowl by the end of this year, this story ain't going away.
Having your words tell the truth, but your tone mask all of it. That is brilliant. That is Russ, so brilliant.
Russ did it.
I guess it's sort of like explaining a complicated situation like it's easy. It's like, listen, man, the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't cut me at the end of that training camp. It was just, you know, some things politically happened going on in there. Behind closed doors, you get a guy who's performing a little well, got a few more opportunities. And so when it comes time to have the meeting, like, yeah, of course they got in there and told me they didn't want me on the team anymore. But it wasn't like they cut me.
Do you question if this is a cool nickname?
So Cam Newton has nicknames for everybody. He is the guy who has nicknames. He has so many nicknames that I need to refer to a list of nicknames because they're hard to remember. So for instance, Jacoby Myers is My Germs. That seems like a longer story, but we'll take his word for it. N'Keal Harry is Doughboy. Jason and Devin McCourty, the twins, are twin number one and twin number two interchangeably. And now Mac Jones has been so knighted.
What's been your relationship with Cam Newton been like so far? How helpful has he been to you individually?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, he calls me Mac and Cheese, so I got my nickname. But he's done an awesome job being a good mentor.
Can we be honest here? Mac Jones showed up to camp and was just like, I hope people like me. I really hope people like me. And so if he got a cool nickname that was anything, I think he would have reacted similarly to that because that's not a very good nickname.
Oh, how's it not a good nickname? Like, you are a Mac and you got cheese? Like, that seems like a compliment. But to be honest, it feels like Cam Newton just needed something that went with Mac. Like, he could have called him Mac Truck.
Yes.
He could have called him, I don't know, Mac Makeup, Macaroni.
MacBook.
Mac and Cheese, MacBook, Mac Daddy. Mac and cheese.
Return of those options, the Mac.
There you go. Of those options, I feel like mac and cheese, it ain't bad.
This does make me remember, by the way, the worst take in the known universe I saw yesterday from Marlon Humphrey on the Baltimore Ravens, who said that mac and cheese is just cheese noodles and it's actually trash. We deserve, all of us, to take some time to lift that tweet up and burn it to the ground because it's an awful, awful opinion, and mac and cheese is
bad. Don't do it. Dominique, whatever your hand is raised to say, lower your hand and do not say it.
Mac and cheese is a little bit overrated. It's a little,
no,
it's
what
a
are you doing?
Overrated. It's
what,
a little
what
overrated.
What are you doing?
It's a little overrated. I like mac and cheese. I like a good mac and cheese bake. It's delicious. I appreciate it. But we talk about mac and cheese like it's a main. Mac and cheese is not a main. You don't elevate the side to the main.
Dominique.
Mac and cheese is not a main.
Nobody
says, let's go out for some mac and cheese. Or no one says, come over to my crib. I'm going to make me a big tray of mac and cheese. You say mac and cheese after you say what the main is.
Oh, if I'm at home and I need to eat something, I am not making myself a side. I am making myself a giant steaming pot of Kraft macaroni and cheese.
That's because you're a man child.
Was and might be my actual favorite food because I have childhood memories of the first time I had a friend who had a plastic toy robot. He had a toy robot. And you know what I did not care about? That toy robot, because his mom made us Kraft mac and cheese. I still remember that day.
You lost all respect of true macaroni lovers don't respect you because you're talking about Kraft Mac like that elevated to your aunt made a Mac bake. Kraft Mac is not the Velveeta. Like, it's not the same as Thanksgiving Mac, and you know it.
All right, Dominique, I'm going to step in right here for my friend Pablo because you are dead wrong on this. The true Mac heads, the mac and cheesers out here among us right now, understand and pay homage to the blue box that sustained us as children.
Yes.
You got to walk. You got to learn to crawl. You need tummy time before you can get up and run into the world with grandma's baked mac and cheese. And you know what's there to wean you into it, to nurse you like a baby bird in the nest until you're ready to spread your cheesy wings and fly? The blue box.
Okay, I accept it. It should be a gateway mac and cheese. Agree. It's a gateway mac and cheese. But Pablo's rolling it out there like adults should be having mac and cheese from a blue box as a real meal. If you're a grown man and you're like, hey, I want some dinner, let me get this box out and make some mac and cheese, you got a problem. You're not
and
a true mac
you
head.
Know what else
you
I do,
You are
Dominique?
Not a mac head.
Would anything but a true mac head then take the pot full of the cheese water and drink it? Because this mac head does that sometimes.
Tonight at 10:10 p.m. Eastern, Rangers and Dodgers.
You remember the time the Red Sox had Mookie Betts? Well, this happened.
This is
shipped to right. Los Angeles Betts Dodgers, Mookie Betts, playing right field.
Made it look easy, but
just
Gonzalez, what a throw from Betts,
any team that ever had a guy that could do this and you trade him for three prospects, none of whose names we know, what did you ever think?
One of the best right fielders I've ever seen.
What? So I'm intrigued by that. I would like more of that. Dominique, how about you?
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by that. And I know every year at some point we talk about what's wrong with baseball, how to fix it, shorten games, put a guy on second base in over, or in extra innings. No, this is how we fix baseball. Make it so guys who are capable of doing stuff like that do it more often. Like, how is it that we see Mookie Betts do something like that maybe once a year, maybe twice a year? Like, I want to see that every week. Once a week, we need to just start throwing balls into the outfield and having guys try to make it home from third. I would watch that. That should be baseball, because if we have a game where guys can do that and we don't see it that often, yeah, that game is broken.
Yeah, can we calibrate launch angles so all of the launches are angled towards Mookie Betts?
I mean, and just see what else he can do. Just start launch. I just want a game where we take a pitching machine and just launch his balls into the outfield and we let Mookie Betts dive around and launch them.
Gojo, are you intrigued?
Stop at balls? Yes, I am intrigued. And why stop at balls? Just treat it like Fruit Ninja. Launch anything at Mookie Betts and see how he can throw it back here. I'm not going to put a limit on that guy's greatness, because clearly when people want to do that, cough, cough, Red Sox, this is what you end up with. Having a look over at the left coast and wonder why, in addition to all that sunshine, they also got your man.
I just like how Dwayne Wade is hosting a game show called The Cube, and it has all of these fancy production values, and all we want is a game show that's just called The Glove, and it's just Mookie Betts with a glove as people throw things at him. It is Friday afternoon. That was, I believe, an episode of Highly Questionable. That's Dominique Foxworth. He had a fourth grader graduate today. Congratulations to the Foxworth family. That's Mike Golic Jr., who I believe has the diet of a fourth grader. Go find them wherever. Diet. And oh yeah, that is me. Happy, by the way, Philippine Independence Day tomorrow. Shout out. Easy Mac on me.